Why, this was a long time ago, of course. And, one has read recently the reports that written by his brother. And I looked over his own papers and those of Grota Reba.
The IRE?
The IRE thing. But to the best of my recollection, that Carl was working just on the general problem of interference, shortwave interference, which included static, any other man-made static, but mainly the static due to storms. And I think it's pretty well known what happened. In the performance of these studies, he noticed that on his records there was an unexplained type of static. It was not associated with the storms, and, which he describes as a his-type static. And he had noticed that he was probably on his record for some time, and then as time went on, he went back and looked at them, and he thought for a time that it was probably associated with the sun, because he had a rotating array that he could measure the direction of arrival of the static. And when he found out that as time went on that it didn't agree with the sun, he naturally thought, just what is it? And I wasn't very close to that work. I was working in ultra-short wave.
You were not connected with that project?
No. Most of everybody at Holmdel at that time was working with Harold Fries, but I was working with another who was co-director of the laboratory, Carl Ingram, and we were working in ultra-short wave. Is a wavelength, say, of 4 meters or so, whereas all the other fellows there were working on the transatlantic frequency.
I just want to review
14
the
meters or something like that. But that was his main job, was to study interference of all kinds.
I just briefly want to review how that was set up. Now there were, as I understand, there were three laboratories. Cliffwood, is that Cliffwood, C-L-I-F-T-W-O-O-D?
C-L-I-F-F. Cliffwood. It's just
Deal,
beyond Mattawan.
And Holmdel. And you were...
No, there wasn't any Holmdel. It was the beginning. When I started working at Cliffwood in 1928, the same year that Carl Jansky came, we came the same summer. And in fact, we lived the same rooming house until he was married. And in 1930, we moved to Holmdel. And it was at Holmdel that most of these nations were made.
Yeah, Jansky was in Cliffwood, I believe, until 1930.
Right, so was I.
Oh, I see. And then he moved to...
We built this land down here. There wasn't any Holmdel before 1930. England and Fries bought the land and built the building, and then we moved from Cliffwood Lab to Holmdel.
But he was put on the static job, and it was quite by fortuity, quite by chance that he came across these... How long did he labor over these?
Well, I think he was I can't say, but I would guess that most of the way through the 30s, he was thinking about this or working with it. Of course, this was only a part-time, static studies were only a part-time thing for him anyway. I mean, an awful lot of his time was spent on just the studies of characteristics of noise. How do you measure static? How do you record it? How do you interpret it? How do you measure what the power is?
Well, didn't he sort of stop recording this in about not early 30s, in 1933?
I think he recorded there as long as, probably in 33 or 34.
34?
But I think that you can find some references to measuring his type static even two or three years after that.
And, if he stopped around 33 and 34, these are things that his notebook should record, and I'm going to take a look at them very soon.
Well, the best thing is his progress reports, I think.
Yeah. Why did he stop doing this?
It was, what else was there to do? He had measured it.
Yeah.
He'd gotten a direction. He didn't know what it was. Nobody did. He really never stopped studying static and interference. He continued that right up till, I guess, the wartime. When the war came along, well, then we all were into... I doubt that he was doing much in static work during the war.
But you think in the latter part of the 30s he was active in this?
Well, he was measuring noise. and static, but what else was there to do?
What else was there to do?
Yes, this is the point. You just can't sit around and
well, wasn't he curious about other sources, perhaps?
I don't think so.
Didn't occur to him. Recurred any of his co-workers? No. Maybe other sources?
No. Well, this was a kind of a diffused source. We had the idea that there was just noise coming from our galaxy. At that time, I don't think anybody had thought that there was noise coming from a particular spot in the galaxy. We kind of just had a feeling it was just coming from all directions in the galaxy. But it seemed to be strongest when he was pointing at the center of the galaxy,
right.
which is what you'd expect. He didn't get any noise from the sun, and the sun is our nearest star, so I guess one wouldn't you wouldn't expect that you'd get something from another little star. And besides, his directivity of his antenna was so large that he couldn't point any particular spot.
As far as you know, Mr. Crawford, did anyone in the laboratories tell him to ease off from the study and continue standing?
I am sure. No. I am absolutely sure. Yes, but there was not a meeting of his boss with our director of research and whatnot, and the people sitting around saying, "Now, there's Jansky. What is he doing? Maybe we should stop that work." It wasn't. It was just like many other things. You're working in a general field, and this came up. He investigated to as much as he could do.
Yeah. You think the people realized the importance of this discovery?
I'm sure they
did. They did not.
I'm sure they did not. Nobody.
Nobody was ecstatic about it. It was
fine. Oh, people were. Yes, we were. Well, we used to kid Carl a little bit about it, because he would get some crank letters from people who were saying that he was interfering with all things that he really shouldn't be, because saying that this was some radio signals coming from non-terrestrial sources.
Those crank letters get sent here?
Yes. Yes, he had quite a
How did people find out about this?
Oh, my gosh.
Publicity in the newspapers?
It was in the newspaper.
No.
After he, you see, there are always reporters at these meetings, and when he gave a meeting at Beals in Washington, there were people came down interviewing. It was written up on the front page of the New York Times about these noise coming from interstellar space.
I'm just wondering if it didn't occur to anybody here that this may be just one of many of thousands of sources. You can point your antenna anywhere and there would be a radio source. Milky Way is just one direction.
Well, the Milky Way is our galaxy. We're in the middle of it, you see. So no matter which way you'd point, you'd be seeing part of the Milky Way. It just turns it points out that he got the most signal when he was pointing toward the center of the Milky Way, in which case his antenna was looking at more of the Milky Way. But I'm sure that nobody had thought that maybe galaxies far or beyond our own would be a noise.
Did Jansky try to inject any theory into this as to what generates these noises? Was it one star or was it a collection of stars?
Well, I think his feeling was that it was probably just a combination of interstellar matter, not only stars, but whatever's in between the stars.
Did he ever try to give a reason, explain why, what this meant?
In other words, he didn't
want to probe too much into the reason behind it. He was in the measuring business, and he measured it, and then it came.
But there was an awful lot of publicity at the time. You see, there was this newspaper, and then the National Broadcasting Company put in a line down to Homedale and interviewed him, and they put this his noise on the air. Obviously, now here is this. Here, these signals or this noise from, I don't know what they even called it noise at that time. They probably called it signal from outer space. And then you hear this shh.
Different than the kind of static you heard.
Different from crash static. Ordinary static is quite irregular and crashing noise. But this was a steady noise. Much the same as what we called at that time first circuit noise.
Yeah. Mr. Carver, what was your job at the time?
As I say, I was in the ultra-short wave business. I was trying to build receivers that would work at frequencies well higher than that, or much shorter wavelengths.
Was there any equipment at that time that was above, say, 14 meters?
No, we had to build our own.
What frequency were you working at?
Oh, 4 meters and 2 meters. But you had to build your own receivers. You get tubes that you would take the bases off and make the leads as short as possible.
Were there any receivers in 1932 that operated at 4 meters?
Not you mean commercially available?
Well, no, no. It could have been used in Jansky's equipment.
Well, that came along afterwards.
What year was that?
Well, I guess even up into 36 and 37, yeah. he was building ultra-shortwave receivers, improvements with as good a, with as sensitive as you could get them.
You feel
I remember he had one and two, and he put it on antennas to listen for this this type of static. But we didn't have highly directed antennas at that time.
Do you think that Jansky was working with what was considered to be the most advanced equipment in those days, receivers and antennas?
Certainly the receiver was, I'm sure. I doubt that there was any receiver anywhere else in the country.
Who built this receiver? Was that Priest?
It was mostly, through Priest's direction. That was his, that's what he was mainly interested in, was his receivers, and sensitive receivers.
And in other words, even if you wanted to measure noise and the static hisses in short wavelengths, smaller, shorter than 14 meters, you couldn't have done it.
Not at that point. Time, no. But as I say, between, I guess this was reported in 32 or 33, going clear into 36, 37, 38, he was working, building receivers that would work at shorter wavelengths. At the same time, he was studying the characteristics of noise, how to record it. And I remember that he got on motor boat noise. One time he built a receiver and did some noise, studying the characteristics of ignition noise. So my point I want to make is that he was not taken off this job. He was not transferred to a different type of work. It was just a continuation.
Yeah. Do you recall, Mr. Crawford, whether Jansky, did he like the laboratories? Was there any reason to suspect that he wasn't happy here?
Not that I know of.
No.
Oh, I no more than the rest of us. I guess all of us were grappling a bit during the 30s.
Yeah.
But you see, we were down working only 4 days a week for a hand in 32, 33, 34. Well, when I was married in 34, we were working 4 days a week and with a corresponding cut in pay. So things weren't too, we weren't too happy about that. But as far as the laboratories as a place to work, I guess we really felt fortunate that we were with the laboratories. So many other places where people were fired.
There wasn't too much opportunity. Would there have been much opportunity for Jansky to carry on this sort of work, even if he wanted to, in other institutions?
I doubt it very much, because, that's the point I think I want to make here, is that all these people who are writing now, Southworth's article, where he says that, maybe it isn't in this one.
What is this called? This is
this one.
Scientific Monthly by George Southworth.
Yeah. Yeah. You've seen this, haven't you?
Yes, this is a mono
of
Bell Labs.
Well, it mentions here, at this point, Jansky prepared his well-known paper describing results. Other papers describe other aspects followed. Somewhat later, he was assigned to other duties, and his work in radio astronomy came to an end. His interest never less continued. I claim that this statement is completely just nonsense.
It's nonsense. Why would
because
write something like that?
He wasn't really assigned to other duties. He kept on at the same work. And to say that his work in radio astronomy came to an end, people nowadays, looking back, they know what radio astronomy is now, as we know it. And with real good hindsight vision, you say, well, gee, Jansky was working on radio astronomy then. But he didn't know it. None of us knew it. So he really didn't, he was not working in radio astronomy. This is just nonsense.
Why do you think he wrote a thing like that?
And he assigned to other duties, and his work came.
That's the source of one of the problems here, and we don't want
his interest nevertheless continued.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting that the type of wording here is almost the same as his brother. His brother's article.
Yes, it is.
You recall that?
Yes, I read that. I think he said his
sometime after Carl Jansky presented his paper in 32, his superiors transferred his activities to other fields.
No.
Well, this doesn't quite say it. To other duties.
Yes.
He would prefer to continue his work in radio astronomy. Southworth says his interest nevertheless continued.
Yeah.
Now, which came first here, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, maybe there's an explanation behind it, rather writing a thing like
there
that.
There is obvious.
But why Southworth? What do you think of Salford? He was a member of the laboratory for many years. Father of the wave guide. And he worked in the group.
Well, he was in radio work, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. People have a feeling now that... it's like a thing that I don't like is it sounds like it was a conspiracy. Like there was a well-laid plan to say, let's stop this work that Jansky's doing and do something else. And this, I just will not go along with.
You think Salford trying to make it sound this way? Would it appear that way?
It looks that way.
Well, that's a source of the problem here.
Well, Salford...
You have to remember the lab that makes it.
I must say, in Salford, in recent years, he wrote a book on his 40 years or 50 years, what it was as a radio book. And if one reads that, you will find... have you read it, by the way?
No, I haven't.
Well, through that, I find there are things that I don't agree with, and it's written from a little sore-headed angle.
I see. He had some gripe here.
I think so.
Did you know...
Well, I'm sure that one thing... I hate to have this on tape, but it'll be like, this must be...
This is confidential.
If I do know that at the time that my boss, Harold Freese, was made director of radio research at that time, that Southworth was extremely put out about it. He had thought that he was the one that should have been.
I see.
As a matter of fact, shortly after that, he started writing a book, and for long periods of time, we never even saw him. He was writing a book at home.
Some sort of professional jealousy, or
I think so.
Yeah,
I think so. And he was, and I think Arnold Bowen, who worked with him at that time, was a very close friend of mine. Since died, his feeling was that Southworth thought that he should have been made director of research, of radio research, because he was the father of the waveguide, and he felt that if there's any work to be done with waveguides, it should be under his wings. Well, as a result of all the radar work during the war, when we went to high frequencies, it was necessary for us to use waveguides. So I was with Freese's group over in the main building, and we took up use of waveguides.
Do you have any reason?
And I think that Southworth didn't like that. He thought that all waveguide work should be under him.
Do you have any reason to suspect that Southworth conspired with Jansky's brother to...
No.
These two things came independently.
Well, I don't know which came first. This one, I guess, was written in 58.
Yeah.
And Southworth is 56. So it's organized is so close that it certainly looks as though Jansky must have read this one of Southworth's.
Do you regard the rest of Southworth's report as accurate?
This report here?
Yes.
Oh, I think so.
With the exception of that statement.
This is the only
okay.
place that I can see that...
That particular statement involves a personality. At least it involves an accusation of some sort. The rest of it is just documented history, and it, in your opinion, is correct.
It cannot be true.
He
was not taken off. Now, to be assigned other duties, I would say, well, supposing he had done... They said, well, now you're going to stop this. You're going to work on antennas.
Yeah.
Or what else could it be? Well, about all we had going on at the time was antennas and the receivers and propagation, and this was a static study, and he stayed on it.
Did you know Jansky's brother, Cyril M. Jansky?
Not very well.
He did work for the labs.
I don't remember that. I didn't recall it. I think it must have been
John
for
Schilling
a summer.
One time.
It only must have been for a summer or a part-time job, I think, because he was professor at this time. Around this time, he was professor of electrical engineering out of Minnesota. Sharp was next door, was in his class. And then when he left there and went to Washington as a consultant, did consulting do work, and then found a company that was more or less a consulting company for all making radio investigations, maybe of noise or field strength. But if somebody wanted to build a broadcasting station, they wanted to know what kind of service area they'd get. This company would go out and make test measurements.
But static was Jansky's job.
And so far as I know, it continued right up until the war.
Well, I don't have any other questions, Mr. Crawford, unless you want to say anything that's on your mind, perhaps about Jansky's personality, how he got along with his co-workers.
No, I still want to come back to the main point.
Okay.
Is this fitness that people are now thinking that Jansky was working on radio astronomy as we know it now? And my point is that he was not. It was, there was no such thing as radio astronomy. In fact, I don't think there. No, it was never mentioned.
The name was coined many years later.
It must have been coined in the late 40s, after the war. And the next thing that really came along that was that you might think was radio astronomy was the British using their radar antennas measuring. They were measuring signals from the sun, and then people started to say, "Okay, these are bodies that are putting out out signals." And then another big boost to radio astronomy came when a fellow at MIT, I can't recall his name, built a method of measuring a very weak signal. You see this?
Lee-Dubridge?
No. As you go up in frequency, this noise from the as you go up in frequency or down in wavelength, this noise becomes quite a bit less. This is probably one of the reasons why Jansky, well, we had trouble receiving it on these short wave sets, on these ultra-short wave sets, because the cosmic noise decreases with frequency. But, it really gave radio astronomy a big boost when
your
Dickie,
point is,
Dickie had a, and I can't think of the name of what he called it, but it's a radiometer. The Dickie radiometer was a method that you could measure signals down to very low levels. Say, you can measure signals that were even smaller than the set noise.
Is that the same fellow who's in Princeton now?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And all radio astronomers now use this, so they can measure, and they have much more sensitive equipment than that at this time. But the point is that Jansky kept in the interference in the static business.
Yeah.
He didn't think he was doing radio astronomy. Nobody else did.
Yeah.
The astronomers didn't take it up. And in fact, even this Grota Reba, in his articles, he doesn't speak in the 40, which is, this is practically 8 years later,
mm-hmm.
he calls them cosmic static. And he nowhere speaks of this as a type of astronomy. It's a static. And did you read Grota Reba's article in this?
Yes, part of it. Read the introduction.
That was one thing that was kind of interesting, what he said. My estimation is obvious that Carl Jansky had made a fundamental, very important discovery. Furthermore, he had exploited to the limit of his equipment facilities.
Yes.
A greater approach may have been necessary to construct. Now, there's the only place that I can see that the laboratories could be criticized, supervision and whatnot, and none of us, and I have to count myself with it, too. I was not in supervision at that time, but Southworth was in the company. He knew all about this.
You mean none of you were too curious
Espensheed,
to pursue the thing?
Espensheed, who has written, you know of him, quite a bit of historical things. And in many cases, he will go back in some of his old notes and show where he kind of predicted this or that. He didn't, nobody was clamoring, now why don't we build new equipment? Why don't we build big antennas? Why don't we do something else and track this down? It just wasn't.
Was it perhaps because you people were too telephone-oriented?
Might be.
But the atmosphere was not one of thought which was abandoned. I mean, you had certain directions, and you had to build equipment, and there was a problem of the transatlantic telephone.
Yes, but Carl still, as I say, still kept in the static measurement, and he did put ultra-shortwave receivers on antennas to look for noise in that. But he apparently never, either he didn't receive this same type of static, or he didn't gain any more information.
What did Carl Jansky do between 1940 and 1950? That seems to be a blank.
1940?
1950.
Well, during the war, he was on the classified project. He and, well, and another fellow that works here now, Edwards, out there. It had to do with, I think they were receiving transmission from German submarines.
What about after the war?
After the war, well, during the war, possibly before the war was over, I know that Carl, again, noise studies, he was given the job of studying the noise in high-frequency amplifiers. And how do you decrease the noise? And what can you do to make a better so-called noise figure, a more sensitive receiver?
In other words, he did this throughout his whole professional life, way into the time until he got
there. Except for the period during the war when they were using an antenna gear for in recording, I think, German transmissions. It was never really spelled out. We didn't ask.
Is there anything you'd like to add, Mr. Crawford?
No, I guess not, except that...
What about his camaraderie ship?
Oh,
people like him?
Fine. He's a very strong competitor. He loves to play in sports like tennis and table tennis. I used to play table tennis with him today after
seven
hours.
Part
baseball,
of the
group. Sure, and we belonged to we had a kind of a bridge club, about four couples of us that we... I can't remember what it was. We met every week, and maybe every 2 weeks. Play bridge. He loved to play bridge, and was a very competitive bridge player. I mean,
Did he ever complain about his illness or things like that, or was it known to his coworkers that he was very ill?
He had Bright's disease and very extremely high blood pressure, so that he had to. He never smoked or drank. He wouldn't. But he would come to, we'd have parties where we would, where there'd be cocktails or beer, and people get pretty happy and singing. Carl would, sometimes I played the piano, and I remember he'd be alongside the piano with a glass of water singing with a group, you know. There was no, he was just one of the fellows.
Yeah.
And quite well liked, I'd say.
Well, thanks very much.
I used to argue with him quite a bit.
Yeah.
On politics at that
time. Really?
He was a rabid anti-New Dealer. He didn't care for
he
Roosevelt,
was
whatever.
Informed in world affairs?
Oh, none of it, as much as the rest of us, but we argued about it. But we used to, we were thrown together an awful lot, and 8 months together at these parties. And I am absolutely sure, because we were all making about the same salaries, we came to come at the same time. Well, there were five of us.
What were the salaries in those days?
Well, when I was married, I think I was getting $27 a week.
Oh, my goodness.
In 1934.
This is a man with a bachelor's degree and
and I came with the company in 28 at $30 a week. Then I think it got up to 33 or 34. And then the depression hit. We went back to 40 a week, and I was down to something like 27 when we were married.
The pay here compared to, say, university pay?
Probably not too different. Probably even better at a university at that time.
Is that right?
I wouldn't be surprised. I know my wife was a school teacher in Red Bank, taught in the junior high school. And when we were married, she would make more than I would.
Well, thanks very much, Mr. Crawford.